Welcome to Bounce Back. My name's Yvonne Fletcher from NY Events and you're listening in on DRN1. Bounce Back is a fun talkback show and today we have Matt Storrow. Welcome, Matt.
Thanks, Yvonne. So happy to be here. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. I'm fantastic. Stoked that you're here, actually.
Yeah, it's nice. It's nice and intimate, little room, you know. There's like a black wall going on. I'm just commenting on my surroundings.
We usually have like pretty lights as well. So
you do have a little bit of pretty lights down there in the corner. Yeah. No, this room is very well lit. If people want to close their eyes and imagine what we're in right now, it's very well lit.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, right?
Yeah.
Hey, Matt, can you share a bit of your background? Like how did you start in comedy?
Yeah.
And why did you start?
So, I suppose the first moment I can remember really considering it was actually someone made a sarcastic comment to me at soccer training in high school.
Yeah.
I can't remember. I made a joke and someone went like, "Oh, Matt, you should be a comedian." And I was like, "Hey, I never thought about that before." And I think later on I saw a set by Dimitri Martin, who's a fantastic Greek-American comedian, but he was performing on Rove. And that was the first time I thought, like, I really like this, like, as an art form. Like, I really want to do this. I want to do what he's doing. So I got a little notebook and I just started writing little jokes. This is when I was, like, 16. And then I just put a show on. I didn't really understand that you're meant to, like, join the comedy scene and, like, you know, do some open mics and have a type five and then, like, work your way from there. So I just did an hour and a half show for, like, friends and family at the church that my dad was pastor of at the time. And I did that again at 19 and I discovered the comedy scene when I was 20, cause I did raw comedy.
I
won the WA final, that year and then went to the Melbourne final and that was on ABC and I was like, wow, this is all a lot. it kind of ironically sort of ended up similar to the way I imagined it would end up where it all just happens very suddenly. But of course that's just how it felt at the time. And then, I just started being offered gigs here and I've been, working professionally for, almost 7 years.
Wow.
Mm.
That's fantastic, actually. So,
It's quite a tale with many twists. But, that's how I got here, I guess.
Yeah, that's great. And I like the way you launched that, you know, you decided to do something and without even knowing that there was other avenues to explore this in, you launched at your church.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah, well, it is something that I reflect on now. I guess it's something to be said of, like, almost naive ambition, I suppose, because I think if I had that idea to start stand-up as an adult, it would have taken ages. I would have, you know, had so much more going on. I would have been distracted with a job or what degree or what other career I was thinking about at the time. But because I was just a teenager, I had nothing going on and I didn't have the sort of smarts to be like, this could go very badly. This could be incredibly humiliating. You shouldn't do this. So I just did it. And for some reason, nobody stopped me. and I'm grateful to those people. But yeah, it's strange in that I think if I'd tried to start, you know, 5 to 7 years later, it would have been very different. Yeah. It was kind of my naivety that made it so easy to get into it.
Yeah.
Mm.
That's very cool. And what does your... What do you aim to express in comedy then?
Ooh, I mean, that's interesting. I just think, is this funny? I've tried not to like tie my brand down too much. I think it has changed. I think when I started, I did want to be clean. I think I kind of still have that reputation of a clean comedian in the Perth comedy scene. But that's just because of where I first flexed my comedy muscles. I was writing for, you know, church people, a group of Christians, for my, you know, parents who were in the front row. So I think that's inevitably still a part of it. But I think my brand is sort of changing where I'm kind of – I'm moving a lot more into music now. I've got a lot more musical projects underway. That's how I kind of want to drive my online content. So, that's – I've forgotten what your original question, was now.
What does it aim to express, basically?
Yeah. I think I aim to express a lightheartedness. I think I do. I think I'm attracted mostly to comedians like, Dimitri Martin and like John Mulaney, who pretty much no matter what topic they're talking about, there is a lightheartedness to it and they sort of make you feel better about it, even if they're being self-deprecating or they're talking about, you know, some devastating real world event. It's heartening.
Yeah.
So I think that's, if I had to say that's what I want to achieve, that's how I want people to, I'm not one of those comedians like, I want people to think, man. I want people to think and laugh and change their minds. Like, not really. yeah, I'd just like people to enjoy themselves and feel lighter than when they came into my shows.
Yeah, which is, yeah, it's a beautiful place to be actually when you do see that. There's a two-tiered question here. You can choose either one.
Okay.
So what was either your biggest learning curve as a comedian or your biggest bomb as a comedian?
Same moment.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, it was the gig where I think I decided what confidence was, which is very important. And now it's like one of the first tips I give coming for any comedians that are up and coming and want a tip from me, which aren't that many. I make it sound like I get approached all the time. I did a gig in Southern Cross, for all our Southern Cross listeners, and it was for a men's mental health gig, and it was all like the firemen and the policemen of the town, all like older men, just a sea of grey hair. Not my demographic. My demographic is, you know, like 20s to 30s, like maybe a 70 to 30 skew women to men. Like that's my ideal crowd. So this is like not a good time. I'm headlining this, so I've got to do 20 minutes. Everyone before me is bombing. I get up on stage and I am also bombing, to the point that one of the audience members actually got up on stage and took the mic from me to ask everyone to quiet down so they could listen to what I was saying.
Oh, no.
Yeah, nightmare. But I think it was probably one of the worst bombs I've ever had, and yet when I left the stage, it didn't affect me.
Mm.
Like I just noticed like, oh, you don't care. Where does that come from and how can we harness that for the rest of our lives? And I think what I discovered was that until then I'd thought of confidence as sort of like pumping yourself up before you go on stage and thinking, I'm the best, I'm the greatest, oh, I'm so funny, they're going to love me. That was my idea of confidence. But I think that was the night that I started a healthier way to think about confidence was, hey, I know what I can do. I'm going to bring my best. It might go terribly. And I fully accept that.
Yeah.
I accept the possibility that this is going to go like a nightmare. I'm okay with that happening. I think that's like a stronger form of confidence than just thinking you're the best.
Yeah.
Because you know, I think if you just go out there and you accept whatever comes, then you are like truly being yourself, you're grounded, and a lot more calm because there's no stakes. It's like, yeah, so what if it goes badly? I've already accepted that eventuality. So... yeah, I'd say, yeah, my worst bomb and my biggest learning curve happened on the same night.
Yeah. And how long ago was that?
I think that was about 4 years ago now. So, yeah, ever since then, I even on a subconscious level, my nerves going on stage have almost completely disappeared.
That's terrific.
Yeah, just because I don't know, a flick just got switched. Is that, or a switch got flicked? Switch got flicked.
Yeah.
And then switched. Yeah, where in my head where I just kind of always accept when I go on stage that this could go any which way. Mm-hmm. And it makes it more likely that I'll do well, ironically. But just accepting the fact that you'll do badly, I think, makes you more likely to do well because you're not, you're not as nervous. You're not in your head.
Yeah, it's all part of the journey really, isn't it?
Mm, yeah, and I don't think it's something that maybe can be taught. It has to be found, like nirvana. It's sort of like confidence comedy nirvana. So yeah, I'm lucky.
And as a performer, what's been your best experience then?
Ooh, my best experience, I mean there's so many. For some reason there's one particular gig in Sydney that stands out to me. I usually try and go to Sydney and Melbourne every year, not this year obviously. But most years I do at least 1 week in each city. And I think it was the first time I'd ever been to Sydney. And there's this room called the Cafe Lounge, which is now no more, thanks to COVID, RIP. But it was one of my first gigs I ever did in another Australian city outside Perth. And it was just 5 minutes. And I got up and I don't know if it's just in my memory, but I think it might have been the best performance I've ever done. Like I just tore the roof off the place. And I had other comedians come out to me afterwards and saying, like, I've never seen someone do so well while being so clean. And it just kind of blew me away. And I just remember that night sort of walking home, like floating half a meter off the pavement, just thinking like, wow, I can really do this. This is before I'd made my confidence nirvana discovery. I don't know if that's even the best, what I could say is the best experience of comedy, but that's certainly something I a memory I can tap back into and go, oh, that's why I do this.
Yeah.
That's like the feeling.
Being clean as well, Matt, means that you're very TV and radio worthy, basically.
Yeah. yes. Please take note. yeah. Yeah. I think I'm getting, like I said, I think I'm getting less clean as I grow up in terms of, it's not so much a focus for me anymore. And I think I'm kind of between a rock and a hard place as well, because the community I come from, the Christian community, would watch my comedy and not say, that's not clean at all. You know, he said shit twice and he referred to something sexual for 5 minutes. Whereas, you know, in the actual stand-up comedy world, yes, I totally am the guy you would call for kids' parties. So it's kind of like I don't really fit between the two. Yeah, I think I do fit into that category of like I was saying, you know, John Mulaney and people like that, where you sort of think of them as clean, but they're not technically clean. That's not really going for. Yeah. It's just more the kind of vibe and the kind of mood they give off.
I like that you're adjustable, but because if you wanted to do, you know, that more edgy stuff, you're capable.
Right.
But if you need to do clean, you can.
Yeah.
Not everyone can.
It's good to have it. But I think, yeah, I sort of will think of a joke that I really, really like, but I still am like, oh, that's too pointy for me. Like, I can't pull that off.
Yeah.
And so I'll think to hand it off or put it in something else that I'm working on that doesn't have to do with me. Yeah. So I still think I am still aware of like my brand, but yeah, I wouldn't say I'm tied down to being clean. No.
So Matt, saying that, do you write for other people then? Jokes and stuff?
Not in like a formal way, not like comedians.
Yeah.
I do a lot of writing for like sketches that a company might want to present, things like that. Things that I'm not the voice behind them. I'd say when I say I'm writing for another comedian, it would be literally just like, hey, I wrote this. I thought, you know, you could use it, or
you might be able to deliver that.
Yeah, yeah. Or and they, you know, they'll take it or leave it. Or just in conversation between comedians, you know, you say something. You might be working through a bit, like openly, or you're just talking.
Yeah.
And suddenly you'll say something where they're like, oh. Can I have that actually? And you're like, yeah, sure. But no, I'm not formally writing for any comedians now.
Yeah. Hey, and what's a common myth about being a comedian then?
A common myth about being a comedian. I'd say the average person thinks we're funny all the time. Which is, I've actually, the more I think about it, the stranger it gets. Because you don't think about that with any other profession. You don't, well, you might expect when you meet a writer that they're going to talk in really grandiose, verbose sentences. Or, you know, that a musician's going to do their entire interview singing in melodies. But when people meet a comedian, they're like, oh. Like, it's almost like they're like, when you say you're a comedian, they're like, oh, so this is going to be a really entertaining night because you're going to be, like, saying jokes the whole time. And it's like, well, no, not really. I have a knack for writing comedy. That doesn't mean I'm – I don't know. There's such a diverse range of personalities in comedy. There's people who are complete introverts. They're very uncomfortable talking in groups and being one-on-one. And you won't get, like, a word out of them at all. And there's other people that are just quite kind of angry and irritable when they're not on stage. They're not really that funny, but obviously as a performer, they're great. So I'd say that probably the biggest myth about comedians is that we're always on, always funny, tell me a joke. most of us aren't, I don't think. Some of them, every now and then, but they're just like, yeah, it's rare.
Now, this doesn't have to be a comedian, but who are your biggest influences in your life?
Oh, wow. And it doesn't have to be a comedian. I would definitely been more proud. I would have rattled off my list.
Oh, it could be. You could, yeah.
Yeah. I'd say my dad is the first person that springs to mind because he still is a pastor. So he was always in front of, you know, a large crowd presenting, performing, I guess you could say, in a way. So I think in some sort of very subconscious way, that's what, you know, awakened that in me to be in front of people, to present people. Yeah. I'd put him. I'd have to say Dimitri Martin as well for the aforementioned anecdote. He was the first comedian I watched that sort of awakened the desire to write jokes and really go like, oh, I really appreciate this as like an art form. Who else that inspired me or motivated me? There's a lot of people early on when I was doing those church shows that were kind of waving me on and saying, yeah, let's do it. And they're the adults that should have stepped in and said no at the time. This is a terrible idea. Let's not give a mic to a 16-year-old for an hour and a half. But they did anyway. So I've been thinking about them a little bit recently as well. And, yeah, I suppose I owe them quite a bit.
Yeah, good on them for encouraging you.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I'm not really sure what they were thinking. I'd like to ask them one day.
Matt, they've probably seen that you had that ability and so they wanted to harness that for you.
Yeah.
Adults are really good at doing that for kids.
Yeah, well, you may, maybe, perhaps. I think I was, yeah, I was definitely full of beans as that age. Yeah, so maybe they didn't see any sense in stopping me. Or like you said, yes, maybe they saw I had a little something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What does your creative process look like then?
My creative process. I find that the more I try to have a routine and like a rhythm, the less creative I am, which is kind of this awful paradox. And I think one that most artists could relate to in any form, where you have to have some level of discipline of saying like, no, it's time to create something. But also you can't really force good creativity. The kind of like, you know, sand, the harder you try and grip it, the more it'll just slip through your fingers. So I become aware of when I'm naturally more creative. For me, it's in the afternoons, so around like 2 to 5 p.m. and also like later at night, and just be on board for that. I really like the creative process that Dimitri Martin, actually going back to him, shared, where he reckons, because he does, you know, he does stand up, but he's had a TV show, he's made movies, he has a podcast, he writes books, and he just sort of seems to get up on any given day and go, what mode am I in today? What lane am I in today? I feel like I'm in a writing mood, or I feel like I'm in, a stand up mood. And I have that, but pretty much just between stand up and music.
Yeah.
So, but there, it's like a pendulum that swings, and I'm one of them for like 6 months. So it's quite frustrating, because when I lock in a stand-up show, like, yes, I've got to write another 30 minutes of stand-up for this show, but then the pendulum swings to music and I just cannot write a joke for the life of me, but I can write, you know, music, just stream of consciousness. And then the opposite will happen where, you know, I'll want to be writing more music, but the pendulum is swung and it's all jokes is all I can think of is the spoken form. So, yeah, I'm kind of at the mercy of that. And I just try and be – I kind of just try and ride the wave nowadays is my main way of doing it, where I try and figure out where is the pendulum and just point myself in that direction, really.
I really like that self-awareness question, but in the morning asking yourself, which lane am I in?
Yeah.
Where am I sitting at? That's really cool.
Yeah. I think it's the kind of flexibility you have to give yourself for, like, good – true creativity, and obviously everyone's different, and there's different kind of pursuits, you know. I think like a novelist, if they want to write a book, can't really wake up in the morning and go, what do I feel like doing today? It's like, you have to write your book. But yeah, for someone I think who's got a few things going and just is looking for what's next, it's definitely a good approach.
Definitely. If you could go back in time and say one thing to your former self, what moment would you go back to and what would you say?
Can I sip while I think about that?
Oh, of course you can.
That was a quick sip. I'm done. What would I say? I think if I could go back to like 20-year-old me who like just started, I would say there's no time frame on this. Like, you can take as long or as short as you like. There's no like set trajectory. There's no like, you know, become a household name by this age or forget about it. I think I had that, especially early on, I had that really unhealthy view that like, if I don't make it by 25, like I'm out, like I might as well just give up.
Wow, the pressure.
Yeah. And I think it is partly because of the way I started. Like, I went from not being part of the scene at all to winning the WA final and, you know, going to Melbourne and everything. And I kind of felt like that was the trajectory. Oh, it's all up and up in here from Melbourne to LA and on we go, which was, you know, insanely naive. But I think it kind of depressed me for a little while because I was like, well, you know, now I'm 23 and I'm not like whereas, you know, now I'm a lot more I see how toxic that is, and I'm just, you know, I don't even mind if there's no end destination. What makes me happy is the process of making and performing, and I'll just keep doing that, and if something, you know, life-changing happens out of it, then fantastic. But otherwise,
yeah,
there's no set time frame.
What advice would you give to someone starting out in comedy?
I always think of that. I think it was Robin Williams that when he was asked that, he just said, don't do it, like quit now. but his reasoning was because if they listened to me, they were never going to make it anyway.
Yeah.
So yeah, maybe that. But also, yeah, definitely the confidence thing and definitely the time frame thing. A lot of things that I've brought up now. Mm. And I'd say also not to emulate what others are doing. And it's so easy to do when, because you always, anyone who's coming up in comedy looks up to someone in comedy, whether someone in their scene or, you know, some Hollywood superstar. And you inevitably are watching a lot of them because you like their comedy, and then you start to emulate them. When I first started, I could not perform in a British accent because I watched Dylan Moran all the time. Yeah. Dylan Moran was just my jam. So I can't even do what the voice I was anymore, and I pulled all those videos off YouTube. But I'm putting on like a light Irish accent. It's really weird. And I see a lot of that. I think as comedians that are coming up, is before they find their own voice, they have to borrow someone else's. So they're kind of you know talking in the same sort of cadence as another comedian, whether one I can recognize from Perth or like some American one, or like their writing style even is kind of the same. I would say don't focus too much on one source of inspiration. You know, try and watch even comedy that you don't like, because it still works. Figure out why that works. Try and focus on, don't let someone else's voice get in your head, I would say. Let your internal monologue when you're writing be your own.
Yeah, that's good advice.
Because it's the fastest way you're going to figure out your own voice, yeah.
Mm. Matt, were you involved in Class Clowns as well?
No, right. I was not involved in Class Clowns. I probably could have been, but I think I only really was pursuing – I graduated high school a year early. I was 16 when I graduated high school. So it was only a little bit after that, I think, that I actually was like, I want to do stand-up comedy. So I'd already missed the boat. No, I didn't think I even know about it.
Yeah, I'm not sure how long it's been running for, but I think it's a great program for kids or teenagers basically.
Oh, yeah, fantastic. I think it was last year that I emceed the WA final for Class Clowns.
Yeah.
It's just super great. You don't see many kids that age really trying stand-up comedy.
No.
There's so many more other popular things that I think, you know, 16-year-olds, 17-year-olds, 15-year-olds are into. So to see them like tap into that is generally really cool.
It is very cool. I think it's a great focus as well. If you've got that way inclined, it's a great starter, isn't it? And
yeah, fantastic. It's like if you like the sort of like the old idea that if you want to learn music, like learn piano first, because it's just such a basic way to understand how scales work, how notes work, how rhythm works. It's kind of like an all-in-one thing. So, you know, teach your kids piano and then they can choose their own instrument later.
Yeah.
And I think if you want to walk, I want to walk, my knee's injured right now. if you want to work in presenting of any kind, public speaking, acting, any of those kind of in front of people, train that charisma muscle, then stand up is the piano for that. It's a great way to test your confidence and your ability to express yourself openly and naturally in front of a crowd.
I didn't ask you which knee of yours is sore.
My right knee.
It's my right knee too.
Is it?
I've got a sore right knee too, so we're kind of twinsies right now.
Anyone else with a sore right knee, call in, because we're starting a group. Not the wrong knee, the right knee.
It's all wrong, but it shouldn't be sore.
Yeah, my right knee is all wrong. Yeah, it's very swollen.
Matt's going to get tested for gout too.
Yeah. Well, I'll go to the physio. I don't know if they test for gout, but I'll find out.
You're much more younger than me. I felt so old when they said we're going to test you for gout.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm so healthy. How could it be gout?
Right. I'm actually in the best shape of my life right now. Like I think it might be why my knee is busted is I started exercising.
Oh.
And now my body's been like, no, none of that.
Yeah,
you don't get to not do that for 26 years and then just start.
Yeah. See, mine was I walked the Busselton Jetty.
Mm.
And then after that, my legs swelled, my knee first started off, and I couldn't move. And exercise. I love exercise, but so I'm a bit annoyed about that.
Yeah, but there's clearly pros and cons to this. Yeah,
it's great. Anyway, all right. So I've got a little bit of a questionnaire thing for you.
Sure.
And it's a which do you prefer?
So, okay.
All right. So which do you prefer, biscuits or cake?
Oh, gonna say biscuits. Not a huge cake fan. Mm. I don't know what it is. I'm not anti cake, but just most of the time, unless cheesecake, I do like cheesecake because that's kind of just cream on a biscuit, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. My mum makes the best cheesecake and I can't eat it. So,
all right. That'll be here next time, hopefully.
I'll remember for you.
Yeah.
Tea or coffee?
Oh, I feel like it's an interesting question because I feel like tea is like the nice woman that you can take home to mum that you should marry, but then coffee is like the wild, you know, the wild chick that mum wouldn't like, but you're kind of like, hello. I would
love
have to
the
say
analogy.
that's just how I feel about it. I know that tea is better for me and I should stick to tea, and coffee kind of messes me up, but you know, look, I'm going to have to say tea. Let's stay away from the toxic relationship. I want to say tea.
I like where you went with that. That's really clever.
Okay.
Morning or night?
Night, all the way.
Yeah.
Thanks to homeschooling, I just got to wake up whenever I wanted.
Yeah.
So I'm still a night owl. Yes. Yeah. For sure.
Yeah, I'm more of a night owl. I'm with you there. All right. Text message or phone call?
Oh, text message most of the time. The thing I don't like about phone call is that you're like immediately being told like, no, you have to speak to me right now. This conversation has to take place immediately. Whereas with a text, it's like, here's what I have to say in your own time. And I think I feel more less anxious about that form of communication.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So summer or winter?
Winter. I prefer to be cold than to be hot. I think it's easy to fix. Mm. Yeah.
I like being cold. All right.
Okay.
It's not about me.
Is that? I think women don't like being cold in general.
Yeah.
I think because women get colder.
I like autumn, but that wasn't where I was going with it with you. So,
yeah. No, if you said autumn or spring, I would have chosen probably spring because it's not too hot yet. It's just nice.
But autumn's like that and less bugs.
That's like a bugs. Good point.
Yeah.
Autumn was my original favorite season, but now I'm not so sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Traveling in autumn's beautiful when we get to.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't. That's painful to think about.
I know. Right? chocolate or vanilla?
Are we talking like just in general or an ice cream?
Oh, an ice cream.
Oh, ice cream. Then vanilla.
Okay.
Yep.
Yep. Comedy or horror?
Oh. Okay. To perform comedy, obviously. but in terms of like movies, TV shows, horror.
Yeah. Okay.
It's strange. I don't know. I don't enjoy watching comedy that much.
Mm.
I don't know if it's because I'm like analyzing it while I'm watching it or it feels like, you know, if you work at Baskin Robbins and then your friends want to get ice cream and you're like, well, I'm still getting ice cream, but I'm also at my place of work. that was very specific because I used to work at Baskin Robbins. So I would say horror overall.
What's your favorite horror movie then?
See, that's the thing. I don't even have a favorite horror movie. Actually, no, that's not true. The Cabin in the Woods.
Oh,
and it's interesting because it's a funny horror movie. It's very, very good.
There you go. Mm. All right. Reading or writing?
Writing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Doctor Who or The Walking Dead?
The Walking Dead. Probably The Walking Dead. I haven't seen enough Doctor Who. I have not seen enough Doctor Who.
All right. And the big one, coriander or not?
Oh. See, I don't mind coriander at all. I'm not one of those. What is it? There's like a percentage of the population that it tastes like soap?
Yeah, apparently.
In their mouths?
Yeah.
Yeah, just because of their DNA. No, I don't have that thing. Does not taste like soap to me. I'm fine with it. I don't like it. Like I wouldn't be like, "Where's my coriander? I ordered coriander." But yeah, not opposed.
Yep. Mm. It's meant to be good for you anyway.
Yeah.
All right. What is one of the most? What is one of your most treasured moments or memories?
Ooh, in my entire life.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's huge. Probably I think overall I went on a trip through Europe by myself in 2015. And it was like, it was 3 months. So I'm not really saying like a moment, but it was just amazing. Not in terms of just obviously I went to Europe, but also just I worked through so much anxiety over there, like being by yourself. It was kind of like a coming of age, I think. I didn't even intend it to be, but, you know, just being in the middle of, like, Greece and you don't understand any of the signs and your phone doesn't work and you've got to find your way to the hostel that you don't know where it is. Just over, like, working through those situations made me, like, a much more calm and, yeah.
So sort of self-discovery and yeah. Showing yourself you're capable.
Yeah, I think I did, like 3 years of growing in 3 months.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, so... Yeah, I would point to that as one of the best, yeah, the most treasured experiences of my life.
Yeah, well done. What is a challenge that you faced and it's something that you're grateful for?
Ooh, a challenge I faced that I'm grateful for. Ooh, there's probably a lot, actually. In stand-up comedy, it's like almost every day. I'm thinking of Shapiro's challenge, which was used to be when Shapiro's Tuesdays used to exist, RIP, at the Brisbane Hotel. And they used to have the Shapiro's challenge. So you'd get up at the start of the night and they'd get the audience to pick a random topic, absolutely random out of the hat. The audience would pick a letter of the alphabet and then someone would just yell out something that starts with that. And you'd have about 30 minutes to go away and write like 5 jokes about that. Later it changed to you had to write 5 roast jokes, like against an opposing comedian.
Yeah.
And I consistently surprised myself with how well I did under pressure. It amazed me because, you know, back at home I'd be racking my brains all day to try and write one joke and yeah. I couldn't do it. Nothing good. But, you know, put me under that amount of pressure. Mm. Here's a topic. Here's 30 minutes to write 5 jokes. And I did it very well with time to spare. So.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was a challenge and that I'm grateful I had because it kind of taught me that I can get into a headspace where, you know, I can tap really into that. Good at
thinking off the cuff and improv then? Have you done any?
I've done a little bit of improv. Not really. I mean, you're always in a certain gear of improv when you're doing stand-up because it has to be, you know, casual, fourth wall down. You have to react to the audience and things like that. But in terms of like in an improv troupe, no, not really. Mm. Yeah. Maybe okay. In drama class in high school.
Did you do drama then?
I did do drama, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, there you go. Mm. Okay. Tongue-tied here.
That's all right.
What has been the most funny thing that has happened to you recently?
Oh, the funniest thing that's happened. Okay, well, this happened today.
Okay.
Basically, I went to get a haircut today, and Mindy is injured, as aforementioned, and I was in the seat getting my haircut, and some guy rolls into the hairdresser. He's like, "Excuse me, does any of you guys have a silver car?" And I was like, "Yeah, that's me." And he was like, "Well, you've left your handbrake off, and it's rolled into the middle of the car park, and it's just blocking all the traffic." So I'm like, okay, fantastic. And there's like 7 people like in their cars, angry, confused, lined up behind this car that's just floating in the middle of the car park. And I have to limp, like hobble like a pirate past all of them into my car and drive. And they're all just like shaking their heads at me. And it was only funny when I got home. When I got home, I was like, that whole thing is pretty hilarious.
That is very funny. Thank you for sharing.
That's all right. That happened not 12 hours ago.
I'm laughing with you, okay?
Thank you. No, yeah, please do. Yeah.
That's great. I would have expected a little old man for that one.
Yeah, I think they all were. They were like, who is this man who looks otherwise sane? It's the first time I've ever done that, is put my handbrake on. I should say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's one of your own personal mantras?
Mantras? Ooh. Man, I feel like I have so many and now lately it's not really a mantra. It's sort of a saying that I say all the time to sort of stop a conundrum I'm in where, I don't know, for example, I have to get sausages for a barbecue.
Yep.
And I'm like, is 8 sausages enough or should I pay more for 10 sausages? And then I go, I'm going to get more sausages. And the mantra is, worst case, I have sausages. So I say that to myself all the time, kind of like, worst case, this happens. Yeah. And I just, I don't know, it just helps put things in perspective. I'll probably leave this room and think of five better ones. But for right now, I'm going to look in worst case, insert a decent thing.
I am with you, but I do think that it's better to oversupply than undersupply.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a really bad place to be.
Better to overdress than underdress as well.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. That's another one of my
favorites. Just own it, right?
I just wear a tux everywhere just in case.
I lived in Sydney for 5 years.
Yeah.
So when I came back to Perth, no one really dresses up here. So
yeah.
I was like, whoa, you know, I'm really overdressed. So now, you know, my girlfriends are going out, but they know we're going out and we're getting dressed up.
Yeah, okay. So you've set the tone now. Good. That's good. You're right. People are a little bit more fancy in Sydney. What is that? I don't know.
I don't know either, but it's fun to get dressed up.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Occasionally, yeah.
What's the dumbest way that you've been injured?
Well, I did nothing to deserve this knee, so I'm going to put that up there. Dumbest way that I've been injured. Oh man, there's so many. I'm trying to narrow it down. One time I was on a swing, and I swung so high that like I was like at a full 180, like parallel to the ground, so I just slipped from the swing at its like highest point and fell on my coccyx. That hurt a lot. I was another time I was chasing my friend through a door and he slammed it as I was chasing him. So I just went knee first into the door.
That's what's wrong with me.
It was the same knee. Might be that.
Okay.
But I don't know. That's all like injuries that are so brutal that they're not embarrassing. I like, okay, like that. Neither of those are really embarrassing. What's embarrassing is like when you bite into a pie and the mint squeezes out between the pie and the roof of the pie and it goes like on your face and burns your face and you end up with like a Joker scar. That's embarrassing.
That's not cool.
Yeah. So I want to lock that one in actually. Yeah. The funniest way I've been injured was that the...
Did you really do that?
Yeah, I really did that. A couple times, actually. It's actually something that's followed me all my life. It's terrible. It's a terrible feeling.
It doesn't sound too good.
Mm-mm.
Has anyone ever tricked you into doing something or believing something?
Ooh. Well, I used to be a Christian, so let's stay away from that. Tricked me into believing something. I can only think of me doing that to my little sister all the time because I realized at some point when she was like 3 or 4 that I could tell her anything and she'd think it was true. She used to tell her that there were these like mythical giant bugs that like would come and grab little girls. I know it's so mean when I think about it, but I was like 10.
The poor kid's got massive anxiety. With yeah, that now, right?
She still has, I don't know what a fear of bees is, but she's got that. Bee phobia, probably more interesting than that. But have I ever been tricked into believing something? You know what? I probably have, and I haven't figured out that I've been tricked yet. I've probably a whole bunch of things.
All right. What is the best thing about you?
Oh, my God. Ooh. Ugh. I mean, that's so hard to answer for yourself.
I know, right?
Because it has to be something that someone else decides. You can't be like, no, the best thing about me is this. But I suppose the question is more like, what do I most like about myself?
Mm.
I don't know. I think I've always had a natural instinct of what I should be doing and where I should be going.
Yeah.
I'd say that. I've never really struggled to be like, what's next? I've always... just had a sort of a sixth sense for like, yep, this is the right place to be and I'm doing the right thing and I'm putting my effort into the right area. And that kind of just helps me narrow down what I'm doing. So right now I'd say that's a part of myself that I appreciate. Yes. Yeah. Is it the best? I don't know.
It's a hard question because I know if I say to you, what's the worst thing? Straight away, we go into that negative mindset. Yeah. I know, right?
Can we do top 10 or bottom 10? Yeah.
Well, you could if you like, but I'd rather focus on your good points. Yeah, keep it positive. You know?
No, I appreciate that. You're making me feel very good about myself.
You're great, bud.
Thank you.
Enjoy being around you. All right. What is one of your pet peeves?
Oh, pet peeves.
You could rattle off 10 if you like here.
There's a lot coming to mind. pet peeves. I don't like it when someone does a favor for you and then uses that favor as like leverage later or like in some way or like they've earned points. And it's like, that's not how I think favors should work. Mm. So, yeah, that's definitely one of my pet peeves. Also just grammar Nazi things, saying I could care less, things like that. That makes my eye twitch. Yeah, those are top two, I'd say, in terms of pet peeves.
One of my personal mantras is that I give without expectation of return.
Great.
And so, yeah, I'm with you with that. You don't give to people. You don't give to a homeless person with the expectation that they are going to spend that money on whatever you want them to spend it on.
Right.
That's, once you've given, you release. That's,
exactly.
Yeah.
And it's nice to have that assumption about other people's actions as well, that when they're doing something nice for you, it's not like you don't have to be any level of stress as to like, oh, how do I repay this? Like, that's not the nature of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the universe doesn't work like that anyway.
No.
Does it? Karma. Things come back in beautiful ways.
Exactly.
So, yeah. If you could compare yourself with any animal, which would it be and why?
Oh, I played this game in year 7. And we all had to knit a square for a big quilt that was being made from all the primary schools in Australia or something. And the way our class went about that was writing down like things we thought about ourselves, you know, characteristics, and then looking at that and going, what animal does this sound like? And then we'd stitch that animal. Mm-hmm. And mine was a turtle. So I've always had quite an affinity for turtles.
Yep.
Is the question, what animal would I be?
Yeah.
Yep. I reckon turtles. Also because in terms of why would I be them, the most stressful part of their life is the very first bit. They get hatched on the beach and then they have to make it into the ocean before the birds get them. Yeah. And then they're done. Once they get there, it's like coasting free. Just don't eat a plastic bag. So yes, I would like to be a turtle. Yeah,
they're pretty beautiful, actually.
They are nice, yeah.
Yeah. If you could be a character in a book or a TV show, who would it be and why?
If I could be a character in a book or a TV show. Not a movie. Everything but movies.
Could be a movie. You can spin it.
I could spin it. No. I'll take the question the way it came. In a book or a TV show. I'm trying to think of a Star Wars TV show, so just so I can put myself in Star Wars. Because otherwise I'd probably just pick a character in Star Wars.
You can pick. Go on. Who would you be in Star Wars then?
Ooh. I reckon I'd be Obi-Wan Kenobi. I reckon I have a lot in common with that guy.
Yeah.
You know, he's mild-mannered, but he's a good time. You know, he's mostly good. Interestingly enough, a little bit bad. Yeah, I'd choose old Kenobes, I reckon. Yeah. He's getting his own TV show, so I'd like a piece of that.
Oh, there you go. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay, what is the worst thing you've ever eaten?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I ate something in India that gave me food poisoning for 3 days. Ew. So that's up there.
That's yuck.
That is up there. But I've also eaten a bunch of things I thought would be gross and turned out fine. Like I ate cow tongue.
Ew.
But yeah, but it was
why?
It was for a bet in high school. But it was prepared by our school chef, who was actually like a 5-star chef from Germany. Yeah. So he like made the shit out of it, and it was awesome. It tasted real nice. Like it would just tasted like really well done meat.
I know people can't see my face. I'm horrified.
Yeah, she is really horrified by the idea of that. But I think if you cook anything well enough, it's not that gross. But what's the worst thing I've ever eaten? Or one time in Africa, the guides that were taking us up Mount Kilimanjaro, this is a hell of a way to start a story, but anyway, cause we had our like eating tent and they had their eating tent. And after I was walking back from our eating tent back to my tent to sleep, and they sort of jokingly offered me something from their plate cause they have a whole different menu. It was like these tiny little fishies. You know, they're like you can still see the whole fish, like it's got scales and like an eye and everything.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they were like sardines or something similar, but I was like, oh no, I'll pick off your plate. I'll have a fish, and that was the most disgusting thing I've ever eaten in my entire life.
Oh yeah, I'm a vegetarian. I couldn't do it. No.
Yeah, even I'm a meat eater, and even that was still gross for me. Yeah, no thank you.
I just imagine your breath afterwards.
Yeah, well, luckily that's not a problem when you're like, there's no reception, you're above the clouds. Yeah, there's barely any air to breathe with, so it's good.
It's all right. Mm. I just go straight to the worst thing, right?
Yeah, yeah. Best thing about myself, worst thing I've eaten.
Yeah.
It's good.
Okay. Let's see. What is the best piece of advice that you've ever been given?
Oh, the best piece of advice that I've ever been given. I don't know. It's hard because you don't know those pieces of advice when you get them.
Mm.
I think when you get a piece of advice, you don't really know if it's useful or not.
Yeah.
And then later on, if you reflect on it, you're like, oh, you have done it and it worked out. You're like, oh, okay, that was great. One thing I can think of that's springing to my mind for some reason, but it's really unlikely. It doesn't seem like a good thing, but it was straight after my Raw final in 2014. And this older comedian who I've probably met since and gigged with and hung out with, but I've forgotten who it was at the time, mm-hmm. just happened to be at like the after party. And I was saying something like, oh, you know, it's just really great for this to happen. It's great to be on TV. And he was like, yeah, you know what happens next? And I was like, what? And he goes, nothing.
Wow.
Yeah. And I was like, yeah, I know, but I didn't really know. I just said that. And I was like kind of like devastated at the time because I was like, that's really mean. But I think it was just a really blunt way of setting my expectations, actually. he was right. Nothing much really did happen. It was a start. But I don't know. I don't think that's the piece of advice that – I don't think you could even call that a piece of advice, but – it's sort of been like it feeds into that confidence thing I think of myself mm-hmm. is that I don't let my any opportunity I go into, I do my best, but I am 100% accept and fully am okay with it not working out or mm-hmm. it going very badly. So I think if I could turn what he said and dilute it and turn it into something positive as a good piece of advice, that would be it. That, you know, it's okay to go into an opportunity, take your biggest swing, and if it doesn't work out, then you literally could not have done more. You took your biggest swing, so there's no reason to feel bad about it.
Yeah, that's really good. It's very good advice. Matt, what's the craziest thing you've ever done then?
Oh my goodness, the craziest thing that I've ever done. Okay, so I used to make these videos that were like I would test scenes from movies to see if they were realistic or not. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I tested was jumping out of a moving car.
So, for real?
For real. So,
oh my God.
Yeah, me and my friend, I had two friends with cars, and one of them like just drove parallel to us with a video camera. I think this was pre-iPhones or like early iPhones. And I was in the other car and we just filmed it. So we started at 5Ks an hour and I jumped out of the car just fine, landed on my feet. You know, went up 10Ks, 15Ks, 20Ks, 25Ks. I think at 40Ks, that was when I like jumped out and like immediately bounced off the ground and hurt myself. But that might have been one of the stupidest.
Dumbest way you've been injured as well.
Dumbest
way,
yeah, yeah. I actually wasn't injured as bad as I should have been. I should have been very badly injured.
Yeah.
It was on grass though.
Oh, well, that makes it okay.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. So it's actually not that crazy. But no. Yeah, that's up there.
Yeah, that's pretty scary.
Yeah.
Were you very old when you did that?
No. Nah, I would have been like 16.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. I wouldn't do that now, not with this knee.
I'm just flashing by all these ways that you've probably hurt this knee, and that's probably another
way. Yeah, it could just be a lot of cumulative things.
Yeah.
To be honest, from jumping out of the car to running into a door to, yeah, all of it.
Yeah, very, very bad decisions, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I regret them all. In fact, if I could go back, let's go back to that, go back to younger self question, I'd be like, take care of your right knee. Put it in a brace now.
Yeah. Don't be so hardcore on your body.
Exactly.
Netball's bad too, right?
I've never played netball.
I'm meaning for me.
Oh, right. Yeah, netball is almost as bad as jumping out of a car, I'd say.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, I never did that one.
Yeah, well, you've got to live a little. And hurt yourself a lot.
No, I've done that. I've hurt myself way too many times. Have you got any fringe shows coming up?
I do. I'm going to be doing two fringe shows. Do we have some kind of embargo? We're not allowed to talk about them? I don't know.
I don't know.
I hope not. Here they come.
Okay. Start
I'm doing the show. I'm doing the show I did last year, A Cult for You. That won a little weekly award, best comedy. So I'm doing it again.
Fantastic.
15 nights of it. I've never done a run that long in my life.
15 nights. 15 nights. That's amazing.
Yeah, it should be really great. I should be a very polished performer by the end. But yeah, I really like that show. It's my first show I've done not as Matt Storer, but as a character. So yeah, there's something really cool and liberating about that. And then I'm also doing a musical comedy show because the pendulum is with the music right now. That's called Hot Nonsense. And it's basically I'm just going to have like a lot of songs ready.
Yep.
And they're going to be – every night they'll be performed in a random audience chosen order. Either they'll choose it out of a hat or they'll vote or something. I haven't figured out the finer details yet, but
You'll play an instrument to
I'll have backing tracks, I'll sing them, and yeah, I might have an instrument. I want to get a keytar, but looking into keytars.
What is a keytar? Like, is that one the one?
It looks like a guitar, but yeah. where you strum is and all through the neck is a piano keyboard.
That's cool.
So it's basically like a synth that you strap to your body. Yeah. And I probably couldn't learn it in time for February, but I will try.
I know someone I can give you details for who would probably be able to teach you that.
Teach me the keytar?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. He knows
every single guitar. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Backwards and forwards.
I will send you details.
Excellent.
It's very cool, actually. Sorry, you've got the two shows. How many shows are you doing the musical one for then?
That will be six. No, five. Five all up.
You're not going to sleep.
I'm not going to sleep. No. I've got, the 15 nights. That starts as soon as Fringe starts. And then I've got like 3 or 4 days off. And then I do the 5 nights.
That's fantastic.
Of Hot Nonsense. Yeah, I will be tired. But I can't wait.
No, it's going to be great. I'm so grateful we're here in Perth and we're able to do Fringe. It's a good
place
to
be. Yeah, super lucky. And just between us, I know we're on the radio, but just between us, I wouldn't mind if the East Coast didn't make it across because then we'd have a lot of audience share between us, just us WA comics. But, hey, they're welcome. You guys are welcome. I'm just expressing how I feel.
I believe that our borders are opening, aren't they?
They probably will, yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
And that's great. Really happy for you guys.
I found it interesting today. I went somewhere and they were going back to contact tracing. Mm. I was like, whoa, why are we going back to that? And they're like, well, the borders are opening, so we're going to have to. And I'm like, oh, no.
Yeah. The filthy unwashed.
It's another job, man.
Yeah. I've got to get this app. Yeah, it's like a whole thing.
Yeah, we've been a bit spoiled here. We really have. It's been amazing just being coasting along in our little bubble.
Yeah.
I don't want anyone to burst our bubble.
Since, like, I can't even – it's hard to, like, get any sense of time this year, but I can't remember when our lockdown properly ended and Perth became, like, normal. It wasn't that long. It was really only
– it was very short. So yeah. We came out where we started to be able to go to – cafes and restaurants again. I think it was May.
Yeah.
And Nicole and I actually did our first comedy show back in June. So
right. Yeah. So you guys were right back out.
Yeah. We did all the COVID training, the COVID cleaning, and we went, right, we're going to restart. And
right.
Yeah, very reduced numbers, and we had to, you know, do the social distancing thing and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah. It's been a very transformational time for the comedy scene. A lot of rooms have started. A lot of rooms have, you know, stopped or gone from weekly to monthly. It's changed the face.
Mentally, how did you cope with the COVID lockdown part? I know it was only short for us, but yeah.
I think I was okay. I'm an introvert, so, you know, stay home all week. That's fine by me. that's absolutely fine. I think I did put a lot of more of pressure on myself as I should use this time to, you know, create and make things. And but I just threw everything out. You know, I didn't have an outlet to perform. I was meant to be in the Melbourne Comedy Festival. I was meant to do the entire festival. It was this whole big thing. And, you know, I'd got, like, you know, been given money to do it. Like, you know, I was in a festival managed room. Like, it was all happening. And then it was just, then suddenly that entire month of my life was
just wiped gone. Out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was kind of just, you know, trying to find my creative feet, I guess. And, I probably didn't do as much work as I could have, but I think I don't beat myself up about it. I think it was a weird headspace for everybody.
Yeah, it was.
It was a very uncertain time where you had no idea. Is this the rest of our year? Is this, you know, what is this? Mm. So it's turned out okay. We're okay.
We are okay.
Yeah.
Thank goodness.
Yeah.
Matt, have you got a I'm tongue-tied again. It keeps happening.
That's fine. I'm
gonna drink more water. Mm. Have you got a joke that you could share with us?
Ooh, a joke. It doesn't have to be my joke, does it?
No, it doesn't have to be your joke. Just credit the person it belongs to.
Okay. Well, in the spirit of this conversation, this is one of my favorite Dimitri Martin jokes. And now I'm thinking about it. I'm like, is this going to go okay? It should be fine. But he says sometimes he likes to confuse people. And just say, I'm not racist before, like, just a random sentence.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll be like, I'm not racist, but this meal is delicious. And they're like, that's not racist at all. And he goes, I know. I said I'm not racist. Oh, my God. Mexicans never listen. That's what he said, just in case you're mad about it. That's a Dimitri Martin joke.
If people wanted to find you on social media, where would they find you?
They would find me. Best place, I think, would be on Instagram. Never thought I'd say that. There it is. At Matt Stora here. That's me. At Matt Stora here.
At Matt Stora here.
Yep. And I'm also making a TikTok soon.
Are you?
I am, because I'm going to be pumping out a music video a week as of probably December.
That's very ambitious.
Very ambitious, but I'm trying to get like a 5 or 6... So all these songs, I'm writing songs for my show anyway, so yep. I'm just going to be publishing them ahead of time. I'm trying to get like a 5 or 6 song head start. So I'm constantly like every time I release a song, I'm already like 5 songs ahead. That's the plan. They're only going to be like 30 or 60 seconds long. I've bought a little green screen that I'm going to perform in front of.
That's great.
But yeah, that's the plan. Look forward to that.
On TikTok, how do people find you?
I have not made an account yet. So just go to Instagram at Matt Stora here, where I will post about my TikTok in due time.
Sounds really good. All right. So NY Events have various comedies happening at the moment. We've got about 5 rooms running. So to check us out, look at www.nyevents.com.au/comedy. Come to the shows. We need live audiences. Basically, we need you to come to these shows so that, yeah, we can support these artists and get them out there.
Yes, so. We're like, you know, lovers that have been kept apart. We want to perform for you. You want to be performed for. It's been too long.
It's always a great time as well, isn't it?
Always a great time, yes. Yep. I love NY Event comedy shows. I'm not just saying that. She's not slipping me a 20 as I say this. No, they're fantastic.
It was a 50, actually.
They're always great vibes and very well attended. And, yeah, it's always a great time. Always a pleasure.
We do love it. And like Matt said before, I really love, you know, the vibe. I love seeing people come in on different levels. You don't know if they're going to come in on a happy level, but when they leave, everyone's on a huge high when they leave. And that just runs through the whole week for everyone, I think.
That makes it worth it.
Does. Well, thank you everyone for listening, and thank you so much, Matt, for joining us.
My pleasure.
Next week, we are joined by the crew from 3 Broke Gays. I look forward to having a chat with them and chat to you all then.